You're listening to Blue Roots Radio at BlueRootsRadio.com.
Talk to me now.
The reason I'm doing Happy Talk is really to be of service. I know a lot of really interesting people who have interesting stories, and I want to be able to present their stories really with the hope of helping. It's pretty fascinating to hear about other people's stuff. I mean, it's fascinating to me, and, you know, I think most people are pretty interested in, you know, sort of the disorders that we live with that make us the walking wounded. It's really easy with the way things are going now to turn to substances to try to soothe our angst. If we have any emotional disorders, those tend to blossom under stress. So now is a really good time to be hearing about this stuff. I think the average listener can expect to gain a sense of optimism about the possibility of getting better from whatever ails you.
Happy Talk with Michelle Happy. Conversations with people about problems and solutions, their causes and effects, and how sharing experiences can help us all to live a better life through service to others.
Well, Chris?
Well, Michelle?
What are we doing? We were supposed to have Paul Day with us here today, and we've confirmed in everything. I hope what I always think, like when clients don't show, the first thing I think is, oh my God, I hope they're okay, rather than being angry that they forgot. But we seem to be unable to get a hold of him.
Well, remember when we had him on... You
he
think
was late then, yeah.
He was late because he was at the soccer field and he was late coming in. So I think that just may be his thing. It's show business people. You know how they are.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, since we got a few minutes, and I think for the benefit of the listeners here, I want folks to know more about what you do and how you do it. You utilize Buddhist principles in your practice.
Right.
Now, I don't know why people get into a situation like Paul or you were there.
Uh-huh.
How you get into an addiction, but what Buddhist principles lend themselves well to dealing with addiction problems? How do they work? What do you use?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you decide to be a Tibetan Buddhist, the first thing you do is called the Nundro, which I'm still working on, meaning I'm kind of on hiatus from, because it requires 100,000 prostrations. It can take years to do unless you decide to like go on retreat and just do it all day, every day, and get really strong and lose a bunch of weight from all the prostrations. But there are, in the very beginning of the practice, it has what is called the four thoughts that turn the mind. And the important thing to keep in mind about Buddhism is it's all about transforming whatever poisons or angst or dis-ease into compassion. And we do this by training the mind. And when you hear these lamas talk, they're always talking about training the mind, which in terms of doing work with people who are suffering from addiction or mental disorders or crazy family wackiness, that comes really easy, that we really need to train the mind. So I think the two go together very well. So I can talk a little bit about what those four thoughts are that train the mind and say a little bit about each one if you want.
Well, we could, that sounds good to me, but
okay.
I just want to relate it to, well, I'll just say alcohol addiction.
I will as we go.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thought that turns the mind is to contemplate suffering. And you can see how that ties into addiction really well, because when a person is suffering from any sort of addiction, the pain and agony, you know, originally we turn to the substance to solve the problem, but eventually the substance becomes the problem. And once it becomes the problem, then we suffer greatly. We lose jobs, lose family, throw up blood, you know, get addicted, have DTs and withdrawal. I mean, it's hell on earth to be locked in the throes of addiction. But at the beginning of that, it's always really, really fun. And some people are able to do that without, you know, having a problem. Others can fall into it the first drinking episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like heroin addiction is much quicker and much more universal than alcohol. Alcohol, you know, it can take a lot of drinking and or genetic predisposition. So when we contemplate suffering as a thought that turns the mind, what we do is we understand that there's no way you can get through life as a human on earth without some suffering.
Well, I mean, and life is suffering. I mean, you come into this world screaming.
Right.
You know, and you spend, yes, your early years trying to avoid pain and conflict. But people who find themselves in addiction, is there something wrong with their ability to cope with suffering? Or is it just, I guess there's no one cause, but is there any kind of thing that they share?
Yes, I think people who get addicted on an emotional level tend to be tremendously sensitive, often really talented. They on the natch probably have more anxiety and depression than non addict types have on the natch. So, and that's why I love people in AA, because they're just the most interesting, artistic, fun, wild people.
I have to agree with that. I went to a few meetings with my ex, and it was better than going to theater, because it was, I mean, but it was real, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the up and down, the emotional roller coaster that you're on, but by the end of the meeting, you know, everybody's, you know, hugging and giving, or catching hell or whatever. But, yeah, they are unique people. I think it's kind of like, you know, like poets who, they just see more of the world than the rest of us. They're kind of like the canaries in the coal mine in a
mm-hmm.
way, you know.
Mm-hmm. They, very much so. And, you know, what the burgeoning addict will do is, he or she will try to avoid that pain that's just sitting there anyway. We talk about the hole inside of us that we try to fill. And it's because we're naturally averse to suffering. And once you can understand that suffering's part of the deal, when it comes, you can just say, oh, suffering. I'm suffering now. And then that brings the second thought that turns the mind, which is impermanence. So the suffering comes, but impermanence, the law of impermanence says suffering also goes and is replaced by joy and happiness and fun. And then that again is replaced by suffering, because shit happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the way life is.
Yes, and, it does.
Yeah. So when we get all enthralled with how great things are and we get attached to it being this way from, you know, this moment on, for every single moment, we contemplate impermanence and know that that's going to end, so that we don't, we aren't so tempted to be attached to the joy. And then when the suffering comes, we can at least say, oh, thank God, this too shall pass.
Okay.
So that's the second thought that turns the mind. There is not one thing that you can name that is not subject to impermanence.
Well, that sounds like, I mean, I like that idea, because if someone comes in and they're totally distraught, hit the bottom, whatever, you can always remind them, well, there you are. That's
right.
Now it's time to go back the other way.
Well, it's really interesting, too, what often happens when people first get clean or sober is they're often have a period of just wonderment at being able to stop and feeling the joys of all that. And then they get hit with what we call the wreckage of the past. And that's brings me to the third thought that turns the mind, which is karma. And for the alcoholic or addict, the wreckage of the past is all that stuff that you did catching up to you. So there's a lot of people who get clean and sober who end up doing a little bit of jail time because they haven't paid off their traffic tickets, or, you know, they had a DUI and are very motivated to stay clean now. And the wreckage, the consequences of the things that we do when we're using and drinking has a karmic consequence. And what karma is, it's just simple cause and effect. It isn't, you know, I like this so much better than the way the Christians think about these things. Like the Christians say, if you do something bad, you're going to be punished and by God, you know, but God's going to punish you. And the Buddhists say that if you do something bad, you're going to experience something bad. And it's just kind of equal, cause and effect. If you do something good, you'll experience something good. If you believe in reincarnation, then if you want to know what you were like in your last life, look at how your life is right at this very moment, and you'll get a sense. And the fact that we're born human is amazing, because
yes.
And that's the fourth thought that turns the mind, that it's called precious human birth. And the reason it's so amazing to be born human is that when we're human, we're able to express love, we're able to mentate and intellectualize about things, we're able to care for others, to communicate. I mean, it is really, in all the realms, a pretty amazing place to be. And it's the perfect medium to attain enlightenment, because we are able to purify karma, accumulate merit, learn, you know, be trained on how to convert pain and suffering into compassion. And, you know, if we work really hard as Buddhists and do all the practices and all that, they say that it's even possible to attain enlightenment in one lifetime. I don't think it'll be happening in mine, but I do believe that it's possible with a lot of effort. So, and what you hear in AA a lot is changing our attitude, having an attitude of gratitude, and the thought of just the fact that we're human beings so precious brings up in us feelings of gratitude. So when I'm working with an alcoholic, I will often just pull up one or all of these four thoughts to help people with, like, you know, okay, are you attached to things going a certain way? If you're attached, that attachment's going to cause you more suffering than if you just let go. And, you know, in the program, they say, let go and let God. In Buddhism, we don't believe in a creational God. We have deities that are just The deities represent certain strengths and qualities. Like Chenrezig is the deity that is compassion, and that's the Dalai Lama's. The Dalai Lama is an emanation of that. So we don't have a god out there that pulls strings or anything. It's pretty much an atheistic religion, which is kind of difficult for some people in AA because, you know, I think it's easier to just say, okay, well, God will take care of it.
Oh, but I hear that so much. I hear that so much, you know.
Yeah.
God will tell me how to get out of this mess, and, mm-hmm. I'm in God's hands. You know, but Buddhism it's not a religion. You know,
not per se.
It's a great blueprint on how to live, you know.
It's a philosophy. It is really drawn from new physics. It's very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Esoteric and brilliant. And when you get in to the teachings and listen to somebody, you know, talking about the Heart Sutra, talking about concepts like emptiness, it is just so mind-bogglingly interesting and complex and smart.
Well, the fact that that Buddhists realized the concept of the mind, you know, and have taken it to such detail and extremes, but that it ties in so well with, I mean, it's where the study of psychology began, you know. And they're always reaching out to to science to, you know, learn more, to verify what they know. But if I'm sure that if something proved scientifically not to be right, they would say, okay, we'll look somewhere else.
Yeah, it's so interesting, too, because the Dalai Lama, ever since he was a boy, has always been really interested in science, and he has said, you know, if I learn something from science that runs counter to our beliefs, and these beliefs that we have achieved through meditation and transmission from lineage to lineage, he says, well, I'll change my mind then. You know, he has a deep respect for science, but it's really funny because the Buddhists have known the stuff that is just being discovered in new physics now for like 2,500 years. So, you know, when I'm working with people, since I am so convinced, you know, it's just such a part of my life to think with this philosophical belief set that these things just pop up for me. And most of the people I work with, whether they're Christian, atheist, Buddhist, Mormon, whatever religion, are usually very receptive to the stuff I have to say because, I mean, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it is good. But, I mean, do you tell them that this is the Buddhist principle?
Mm-hmm. I'll say, do you mind if I get a little Buddhist on you? And I always tell my clients, look, I am not here to make you Buddhist, but you already know I'm a Buddhist because I put it on my website, mhappy.com. And I have a page advertisement from Psychology Today. It's very clear on that I'm Buddhist. So a lot of the people who come to me are sort of interested in what that's all about. And I have never had anybody say no, that, you know, people are very open. It's really surprising to me sometimes that they're just so open to those concepts. It's very heartening.
Do you know how many of your former clients adopted Buddhism as a result of being treated?
You know, how many? No, I don't count, but it's really been, it's interesting because in the last few weeks, I think I've had four or five clients say, I want to do this. Yeah. I really, and then, you know, so then I give them all kinds of resources. We have a practice here at our house on Saturdays called Red Tara Practice. I invite them to that. I had an old client come yesterday, and she's got really severe ADD, and said I was so afraid I wouldn't be able to do this because of my ADD, and she said it was fine. I mean, she was like, wow, this, you know, it was short enough.
But just participating in it has the effect of calming the mind, which is,
it does. Would be beneficial. And you know, I've been affected very much by this economy, and a year and a half ago, I think I was down to about 7 clients, and, you know, in the heyday here in my little town of Minden, I think my highest number a week was 27, and which is about as much as I can do. Any more than that, and I'm pretty much crazy. So it really gets to me. It's like, you know, I just find myself wanting to say, well, who the fuck cares?
Really?
And that's not good. So I was down to like 7 clients, and I thought, I've got to do something. And I've always been really introverted, and I just thought, I got to go up to Reno. And so I rented an office up there. I bought advertising at our local liberal radio station, and took a while. You know, I sat in that office in Reno and sort of twiddled my thumbs. What I did is I started writing a book on living with ADHD, which is really a good book. And I sent the first chapter to Tom Hartman, and he emailed me back and said he'd love to write a blurb for me. And
wow,
it was really good. And I'm like all excited. And then suddenly I'm slammed, and I think it was a month and I started, it was a month after we closed escrow on our condo that we bought up there.
Mm-hmm.
That phone just started ringing.
Wow.
And, you know, I was talking to Steve, my husband, about it. And I really attribute this to this regular Red Tara practice that we've been doing. I really believe that just sitting even just once a week and doing these practices has a profound effect. Not because of what they say, but just, I don't know, it's like you enter some sort of a juju, you know, some mm-hmm. sort of a realm when you do these practices.
It's a shame that they don't, I don't know if they would do it in schools or not, but it's just a shame that more people don't know about Buddhism, because they, I know I did, had totally the wrong conception of it at all. I wanted to tell you that in where I work in my little town, there's a Thai restaurant, and the owner was in a couple weeks ago, and I was getting some stamps, and he saw the Mother Teresa stamps, and he says, "I'll have the Mother Teresa stamps." I said, "Are you Catholic?" And he says, "Yes." And I said, "Well, I thought all Thai people were Buddhist." He says, "Well, I'm that too."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "The great thing about being a Buddhist is I only have 5 commandments." I didn't ask him to, you know, list them, but I thought, because I've read that in what little reading I've done on Buddhism, that it's great to mix it. You know, Christianity would do well to like delve into a little more meditation.
Well, yes, we're very, I mean, I consider Mother Teresa a bodhisattva.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the classic.
Which is, to people who may not know.
A bodhisattva, the vow of the bodhisattva is basically, help me to become enlightened so that I can help others become enlightened. And it's a person who is utterly and totally dedicated to being of service and of use to others so that they may also achieve enlightenment. So, and it gets kind of tricky. What's the difference between a bodhisattva and a codependent, right?
Mm.
Well, a codependent doesn't say, help me to become enlightened first.
Yeah,
they just say, I'm going to be dedicated to helping everybody else. And then usually they become totally depleted or crazy or sick or whatever, because they're not really taking care of themselves. And in a pathological way, they're being helpful. So Steve's saying goodbye to me. Bye, honey.
Bye, honey.
You know, he's, I'll see you later.
I'll see you a little bit later.
Okay.
Can I say one quick thing?
Yeah.
About that juju you were mentioning with the Tara practice. What it is the blessing of the Lama and the blessing of the lineage that goes generation after generation after generation, all doing these same practices. That's the juju. It's coming through.
It's that transmission.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's an oral transmission.
So Steve's on his way up to Reno to go be a mailman.
See y'all.
So, you know, the Buddhists, I think of, you know, my question at one point, because I love Jesus. I mean, I've studied Jesus and I've, you know, I remember when I was 5, I got a Bible from a friend of my mom's. My mom's an atheist. And all of the quotes from Jesus were in red. And I remember I would just pour through that Bible and read all the stuff that he said. And then later in life, studied a lot about Jesus. And that guy, if he wasn't a bodhisattva, was a Buddha.
Oh, there you go.
And, you know, they say he went, let's see, it was 40 days and 40 nights when he was missing in action. And they say that he went to the East and was studying at that point. So, yeah, the Buddhists are not exclusive at all. I mean, like the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness. So,
yeah. Well, that's the, you know, the one thing about Buddhism is that it's, you know, do no harm to others. When in doubt, you know, you can't think of anything else to do. Do no harm, but you should always try to think of others first. It's the compassion that that attracts me to it, and that.
Well, the other thing about doing no harm to others is that if we do harm to others, we are equally and profoundly affected because we're generating negative karma, right? So you don't... Is your dog giving you trouble?
She sees something that she doesn't understand. I bought some little... the Adopt-A-Pet dolls at Costco today. They're sitting by the front door. She just walked up to him and said, wait, I haven't seen you guys here before. That was Piper.
Yeah, I could hear you clicking your finger, and I know that language because I do that with Murphy all the time.
Yeah, for the benefit of our listeners, animal sounds are normal in all of our shows.
That's right. Murphy is on the bed relaxing, staring at me because he just heard me say his name. So, and he comes into my sessions with me. And he comes when I'm on the radio in Reno. He comes with me and just sits, and Corey's always talking to Murphy, and what, you know, everybody just loves him, and my clients love him. So he's part of the deal. Maybe he's a Buddhist.
Could be.
You never know. So does that give you, did I answer your question?
Yes, I think you did. I think you did.
And then, you know, another thing that is really important to learn in the program is humility. And one of the things we do in our preliminary practice called the Nundro is we do prostrations. And a prostration is an act, really, it's an act of supplication to the Buddhas of all, you know, time. And we are humbling ourselves to the Buddhas, not in the sense of any kind of Opus Dei kind of thing. You know, where
it's
we're...
It's not like being, subjecting yourself to servitude.
No, although I would, you know, there's a great series of talks by Robert K. Thurman that's available on Netflix Watch.
Uma's dad?
Uma, yes. Uma's dad, he is the director, I think he's the director of Tibet House, but he has a 3-disc series called On Tibet, and then another 3-disc series called On Buddhism. And I actually found his historical discourse on Tibet to be absolutely fascinating. You know, he was talking about how, you know, the Chinese have taken over Tibet. Oh, I just got word from Paul. He said, "Oh shit!" So he's back. So let me get him to Skype in.
Okay. Oh, he's there.
Okay.
Let me get him.
Okay.
All right. Stand by.